Okay, so we believe we're recording. Yep. So, Dr. Jennings, welcome to this Live Theology work group where we're just starting out on our journey, and we're looking at how we teach race, memory, justice, reconciliation in our contexts of undergraduate, church-based, and Christian colleges. And we've been reading your book, After Whiteness. In case you need to remember what your book is, well done. And we just look forward to hearing from you and then engaging in a conversation, and you can help us think through all the things that are facing us right now. So, Dr. Jennings.
Thank you, Peter, for this invitation. And friends, I am so glad to be here with you. It's good to see your faces. Some of you I know, and some of you are meeting for the first time, so I hope this will not be the last time. The older I get, the more I appreciate those who are on this journey we call teaching, this journey we call higher education, and who do so with the name Christian around them. So I am glad to be in the presence of my siblings, glad to be able to share this time with you. So let me just take a few minutes to set the context of this book and the things I'm trying to do in this book. It comes out of the big questions for me, having spent all my adult life now in higher ed, in the academy, in a predominantly white world, trying to make sense of it as a Christian and as a Black man. And the thing at the heart of that trying to make sense is trying to understand where I am, who I am, and who I'm with. Who I'm with as a scholar, as a teacher, as an ordained minister, as a husband and a father, who I am in this very strange place called the Academy. I was going to write this book a little later on in my career. It had been there, and I was waiting until I finished working on a big book on the doctrine of creation. I was waiting till I got that done to write this, but I knew in the back of my mind that I had to write this. My friend Ted Smith, who teaches at Emory, Ted got a huge grant from Lilly to do the next iteration of those kind of state of theology books. We got the great book by Ed Farley, Theologia, out of that effort many years ago. Then it was followed up by the epic two-volume work by my colleague, emeritus colleague, David Kelsey, his books Between Athens and Berlin, and the other book, What's Theological About Theological Education, or something, I forgot the exact title. And so it was Ted's turn. And Ted did not want to write a book, a single authored book. And he started conversations with people, and then he decided he didn't really want to write a multi-authored one-volume book on the kind of state of theological education, because to be honest, those things are deadly dull. And he didn't want to do that. And so he started conversations with a lot of different people around the country about the state of theological education. And then he settled on a group of us that he wanted us to get together and talk about it and maybe write volumes. And I told him, Ted, I would love to do that, but I am so busy and I got to get this book in. Please, Willie, please. I said, okay, man, I hate to see you beg. Don't be begging. So I said, I'll do it. Okay. And I was so glad I did it, because with a great group of folks, and they're listed there at the beginning of the book. And so I put to the front burner what it was going to be at the back burner. And for me, the driving question that has been a part of my life in the academy is the question about what is this? I was sensing something in the academy that I couldn't quite name. There was something there, something malignant in the midst of all that was beautiful, all that was wonderful about learning you know, and I'm a, as you can see, I'm a bibliophile. I love books. I love reading. I love learning. But very early, even in high school, but I hit it in college. There was something there that was malignant, that was fundamentally distorting. And I could not name it. I could not really name what it was. And so as my career progressed and I entered, master's level, doctoral level work, became a professor, then became an academic dean. And in that role, I was deep in the ecology of a school, as a young Black man, deep in the ecology of a school, dealing with everything from freshmen beginning their educational journey to master's students, beginning, middle, end, to doctoral students, beginning, middle, end, to faculty, starting their career in the middle of their career and at the end of their career, trying to figure out what have they done with their lives. And with all manner of administrator, and dealing with them all at their best and at their worst. And also trying to enter deeply into the logic of curriculum and the logic of disciplinary life and the logic of teaching and the logic of research and the logic of writing, and to see how they play with each other. And all the time sensing that there was something there that was evil, that was just moving through it all. There's something, there's a spirit here, but I can't quite name it. And so as I was moving through, I started to be able to see it. I saw his hand, then I saw his foot, then I saw his arm, then I saw his face, then I heard his voice. And slowly I started to see that what exactly was at the heart of the struggles that so many in the academy were dealing with. And so the book tries to name that. It names a struggle that's at the heart, not just of the theological education, not just of liberal arts education, it's at the heart of Western education. It is not a problem located solely in theological study. It's a problem located in Western study. And that problem, in fact, if we want to look at it in terms of its historical origin, the womb of it is theological study. But like with so many of the strange children we've given life to, this one took on a life of its own. And so the book is trying to get at the overarching image that drives Western education. The image, which is the energy that drives forward the formation goal of Western education, whether that education is in theological studies or in anywhere, that overarching image of the educated state is what I'm trying to name. And that image, as I've been saying in many different contexts, it's the image of a white, self-sufficient man who embodies three dismal virtues: possession, mastery, and control. And the trajectory, the fundamental trajectories of Western education that tell us what we're trying to form and who we're trying to become is to become him and to exhibit a finished state, to become the finished man. And what I realized is that all the behind the scenes conversations I had with all those different constituencies I mentioned a moment ago, the tears, the crying, the yelling, the anger, all of it comes back to him. It comes back to trying to be him. And I was clear as I was moving through my career, moving on from an academic dean, I've done a lot of consulting with the ATS and with Wabash. I've been, like I said, I'm like Johnny Cash. I've been everywhere, man. I've consulted all over this place. And he's everywhere. He's everywhere. And so what I was trying to do is to come to grips with that power and where it comes from. It comes out of, obviously comes out of the colonial moment, comes out of the colonial matrix. It comes out of the dream of the master for his sons and daughters. But it's equally the dream of the sons and daughters, the aspirations of the sons and daughters to become what the master father wanted them to become. And so it's that energy that we're caught in between the master's dreaming and the sons and daughters' aspirations to be. And in trying to get my mind around that as a theologian, I looked for the alternative. And where the alternative to that came for me was in both the most obvious and the most hidden place. And that is Jesus and the crowd, not just Jesus, because it's not Jesus as a singular man. It's Jesus in the crowd as an alternative image. And what's at the heart of that alternative image is a fundamental different kind of cultivation, a fundamentally different kind of formation toward, in and toward belonging, to cultivate the ability in people to cultivate belonging in whatever their field of endeavor, whatever vocation they choose, and whatever intellectual shape their life will take. What's at the heart of it is not the exhibition of the finished man, but the ability to draw people together, especially people like the crowd who would not normally wish to be together. So I have been trying to articulate this. And so here's what I realized. I've been in academy all my life. I couldn't write this book in a straightforward analytical fashion. It would not go anywhere. I had to come in through the back door because I had to come in where people live. I couldn't come in through the front door to their heads. You know, this particular decolonial theorist, this particular theologian, this particular queer theorist, I couldn't do that. I had to come in through the back door. As I was telling somebody yesterday, I came into the kitchen with all the dirty dishes on the counter, on the floor, the dog poop in the corner, the diaper hanging out of the pail, kids screaming. I came into the kitchen. And I said, and when they turned around, I said, okay, well, he's already here. We can't, no need to try to clean up now. He's already here. And so by this multimodal way of doing things, I was trying to speak to exactly where we are, but also to name the problem, not just as a problem of concept, but really this is the existential struggle we are all in. And what I also was able to do, I've been a closet poet for a long time. And so I was able finally to put some of my poetry on the table, which made me very, very happy. And let me just say, and then I'll stop because I want to give as much time as possible to talk. The response to the book has been quite stunning and overwhelming. I've heard not just from one or two, I've heard from a lot of people across this country, in Canada, in Latin America, in Australia, in New Zealand, all over the UK, who all say, yeah, you were in my office, you were at that meeting, you were in my house, you know, you are exactly speaking to the reality I live with. And I've been gratified by that, but I've also been amazed by the depth of the problem. wherever Western education is, he is there. And it affects all aspects of our educational ecology. And so my hope is to generate a conversation that would change everything, especially the formation of professors, and especially the nature of the teaching life of professors. I mean, I want to speak to administrators as well, but I certainly want to speak to those of us who are in the academy and who, as one dear sister said to me, you've given me more ways to kill that man, get him out of my life. And that's what I want. I want that man gone so that people can be free to be themselves and bring all who they are to the classroom and to their writing or whatever they wish to do, and bring that freedom to their students. All right, so let me stop there and then we can